Dr. Naylor, you've just received an award from the Royal Astronomical Society. Could you tell me what the award is?
The award is actually not awarded annually, but it's a special award that recognizes group achievement on a large scale for a complex instrument that has helped to advance astronomy. And in this case, it is an instrument that I was one of the developers of, that flew on the Herschel Space Observatory, a European Space Agency mission that is supported by the Canadian Space Agency. And the instrument, we played a significant role in designing and developing, and it's exceeded expectations. So this award recognizes the effort that went into the development of the successful instrument.
And then the Royal Astronomical Society, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's an old society. It's a society of Great Britain, and it was formed in 1820, so it's, reasonably old. Astronomy has been going on since antiquity, but there are a lot of famous astronomers that came through Britain and Europe, and so it was formed in 1820, and actually the first president of the Royal Astronomical Society was Sir William Herschel. And Sir William Herschel was the discoverer of infrared radiation. And it's kind of fitting. I mean, we've been talking about this. It's really fitting that here we are, in 2014, and the prize for achievement by a group was for an instrument on the Herschel Space Observatory, which is named after Sir William Herschel. So it's kind of neat. I mean, I'm sure he'd be chuffed to see how far his relatively simple but important discovery way back 200 years ago now has led to what we see today. I mean, it's kind of neat. So it's a very prestigious society. I mean, Einstein has won prizes there, Hubble, many famous people from the society. They recognize the top flight of scientists in astronomy. And they have a web page that you can go on and look at the history and so forth. So, yeah, we're really chuffed.
So the instrument, what is that and what is its purpose?
Well, it's easier to go on to the web pages that describe it. So the European Space Agency, if you Google ESA Herschel or the CSA, the Canadian Space Agency, or my own web pages here at the University of Lethbridge, they show some of the fascinating results that are coming from the instrument. So it basically provides our first view of the universe in the far infrared, well beyond what the human eye can see, well beyond the limit of optical wavelengths. So you look out of the window and you can see trees and rainbows and things in the visible, and you get a sense for what nature is about. But actually, you can only study how stars are formed, for example, star formation, distant galaxies and so forth, in the far infrared. And so we built an instrument that would allow us to look at the universe in colors, essentially, but colors that are at such long wavelengths that reveal really how the universe works. So the instrument itself is the size of a briefcase bag. It's pretty complex to get into the design, but if you imagine a camera, this is the example I sometimes use. A camera takes a picture of outdoors. If you put black and white film in, you get a black and white image and a monochromatic image. If you put color film in the camera, you get color image, and that adds so much more information. So, for example, if you took a picture of a tree with a monochromatic camera, it might have leaves, but you would be unable to determine the season. If you have color film, you'd see that the leaves are green, or they're brown or yellow, and then you'd instantly know that it's fall or spring. You get some more information. So color encodes and contains more information about the scene that you're looking at. And so in much the same way, the instrument we built provided color information to the cameras that work at long wavelengths. So we basically provide color information at extremely long wavelengths to probe the distant reaches of the universe. And there's a lot of math and a lot of clever things in the design of the instrument. I was on sabbatical. I spent a sabbatical at the University of London, and worked on this instrument back in 1998. And the European Space Agency took it from design to acceptance for flight in 3 years, which is unheard of for a space agency. It usually takes 20 years to prove a concept up, But they realized this was just really clever and needed to be flown. And so, you know, we applied for money. The instrument cost $110 million, the project $1 billion. And it was launched on the 14th of May, 2009. And it's provided unprecedented views of the universe. So it takes a team to do this. There are 18 institutes in 8 countries. I represent Canada. My group here is the Canadian node. And there's an army of very talented people from all engineers, scientists. You know, it's a real team effort. When I explain it in a public setting, I say it must have been something like building the pyramids. You needed a project manager and a lot of slaves to drag rocks and chisel rocks. It's a major project that that really has set the stage, is rewriting history of the universe as we see it. It's just opening up windows that we've never had access to before. And, you know, I think it is fitting that it won this award.
What are some of the results that you're getting now?
Well, the universe, people have a range of interests. So some people want to study planets, things near to us. Some people want to study how stars are formed in our galaxy. We'd call that really the local neighborhood, really. And some people want to look at the distant galaxies and see how the universe works and how it evolved from the beginning. So when you build an instrument, it takes pretty much 20 years to go from concept to launch. And so you must make sure that you provide it with the ability to do an answer, to address the questions that will be posed two decades from now. And so you therefore make it flexible. It has to be flexible. It has to be as sensitive as you can make it. But it has to be able to answer the question of the day. Because the questions that got the project funded are not the questions that you ask when you launch it, because, you know, two decades have passed. So we built an instrument that could do really well many things. And some of the most exciting things that I find are in our galaxy, where stars are formed, and the regions. We've known for a long time that stars are formed in the spiral arms of galaxies, and they're formed in the coldest regions of space, and we've not been able to probe those. So now we can see the prenatal nurseries, where stars are starting to be born in our galaxy, and it really is awe-inspiring. I mean, the images, if you go to some of the links that I can send you, they're just awe-inspiring. And I think the other advances are in cosmology, that high redshift galaxies, and starting to get a handle on knowing when the first galaxies were formed, what distances they are. They're so far away, and yet they contain the very same things that you and I are made of, and that's fascinating. Really, the mechanics of the universe is provided our first unfettered view of this wavelength range, which allows us to understand how the universe works. We've popped the hood of the car and we're staring at it and thinking, wow, this is cool.
How are you incorporating that now into the work that you are doing now at the University of Lethbridge?
It turns out that the success of Herschel has begat another space mission called Spica. And so you build on these things. When missions are 20 years apart, you look and say, well, is this worth following up? And we now realize that we can build systems that are 100 times more sensitive. And this is the technology advancement that's occurred in two decades. And so I'm now leading Canada in a new mission, a new project, space project called Spica. It's a Japanese-led project. So we're transferring all the knowledge that we've got from Herschel into the new mission and pushing that forward. So I don't know what you know about our group, but we've actually spun off this exercise into cancer detection. It turned out that we learned 3 or 4 years ago that one can measure breast cancer with 100% accuracy using this wavelength range. Now, who would have thought that? But the groups that are currently doing it have detector systems that are literally a million times less sensitive than the ones we use. And so I've got 2 grad students working on going after breast cancer with this space technology. And it's shockingly, if you just play the math game, in terms of the sensitivity, by the time the current technology could measure one biopsy from one female, we could measure biopsies from every female who had ever lived in the history of humanity. It's nuts. It's just math. And so one of the things that you realize in this game is that astronomy is the ultimate remote sensing field of study. You can't do anything about where your galaxies are. They're at great distances. So you simply have to have the most sensitive instrumentation, or you really can't compete. And so we're now spinning that round and thinking, well, if we can look at a galaxy, you know, 2 billion light years away, surely we can measure a cancer sample 1 millimeter away. And that's basically, in a nutshell, what we're trying to do. So I've spun off an aspect of my research group to do that. You know, along the way, we've picked up some awards as well. So it's not just the space astronomy, but it's recognizing that the advances there could be translated directly to other fields of study where you know, medical researchers don't have a clue about the state-of-the-art detectors that are available from the companies that commercially provide them. So it's an interesting synergy between space and breast cancer. Who would have thought? But actually, when you think about it, it's kind of obvious.
That's absolutely incredible. Thank you very much, Dr. Naylor, and congratulations on the award.
Oh, you're welcome, and I appreciate it.